near for 4 years and during the 4 years, there's so much stuff happening in Italy and so many lives that we were killing each other and fighting. And I mean, there's just so much mess going on in the Middle East right now. And I was in Egypt. I was in the revolution when it started on January 5th, 2011. I was in the streets with the people. And I kind of saw what happened. When I saw people dying in the streets, and I kind of know what happened, and I see that there's a lot of misunderstanding, and just people in the U.S. don't really know what's happening there. And people get their information from the news or the theater, Fox News. That's not really what's happening. I'm just like, would like to clarify what happened in the Middle East the last 4 years in just 10 minutes. The Egyptian revolution is really close to my heart because I always didn't like war. I'm not going to say it again, but I always didn't like war. And I always talk about him. And, you know, we need to leave and all of that. And my mother always told me that I'm either going to get arrested or killed one day. But I'm like, they're not going to do that. You know, just, you know, to care about me. And but always was talking about Mubarak, because Mubarak has been in office for 30 years, since 1981. Mubarak got to see George H. Bush, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, George W. Bush. I mean, he got to see like 4 or 5 presidents. Ronald Reagan, I mean, he got to see a whole lot of presidents. And he was in office for 30 years. And when you look at other countries, what he has done in 30 years and what he has done in 30 years, it's miserable what he has done to that country. When you look at South Korea 30 years ago, it was pretty much as good as Egypt 30 years ago. If you look at South Korea now, look at Egypt now, I mean, we're way behind in everything. And they always blame Mubarak and what he did. So me and a lot of them deal with Egypt really wanted to kick Mubarak out, but we didn't really know how, because he's really strong. He has been in office for 30 years, and he has a really strong police forces that's protecting him. And there was no way to kick him out. And my happy dream was, I wish he died someday, because we just really can't kick him out. The first week of January 2011, something happened in Tunisia, and that's kind of what inspired the Egyptian revolution. It was a guy who had a car filled with suspects, some fruits and vegetables and whatnot in Tunisia, and the police in Tunisia came and took his car and took everything out. And he was just so frustrated. He had no such space on that, and he didn't really know what to do. And he had a family to feed, I mean, he just felt so helpless. He didn't really know what to do. And he went to meet the president in Tunisia. I'm pretty sure he knew that he was going to go to see him, but he was like, the only thing I can do, I'm just going to meet the president, and I need him to help me. And he went to meet him. He went to meet the president and tell him what happened. But he kicked him out, and he told him that he can't even walk in the street where the president was in Tunisia. And he started crying because he didn't know what to do. And he burned himself alive in the middle of the street in Tunisia as a protest against what happened to him. And after he burned himself alive in the streets in Tunisia, a lot of Tunisians went down the street and started, you know, protesting what happened to him. And he burned himself, and a lot of Tunisians went down the street and started protesting. Why? Because the government in Tunisia, in a couple days, their president got so scared that he bailed out the country and he kicked him out in 2 days. And young Vietnamese were like, they did that in 2 days, what, we can do that? You know, that's just crazy how they can kick their president. And their president actually was in office for about, 25 years. So it's almost as long as war. And if he can do it in 2 days, we sure can do it too. And so young Vietnamese basically just college students in Egypt. And the majority of the Egyptian population is under the age of 40. So the majority of Egyptians are, 60% of Egyptians are under the age of 40. So the majority of Egyptians are young people. And so people went down on Facebook and Twitter and why not, and just started groups and pages of like, we should do something to take Mubarak out. And we decided to go down on the streets on January 25th, 2011. Because the 25th is the day that we celebrate our police forces. And the police forces was Mubarak's tool to control everything in the country. As a matter of fact, he got in office in 1981, and 2 years after that, he changed the police academy to be Mubarak Academy. He changed the name. And so Mubarak was using the police forces to completely control everything in the country. young greening agent decided, well, guinea pigs, we're going to go down the street and we get it. We didn't know how, but we would go down the street, millions of people, would see what's going to happen. And I was in the street, I didn't tell my mom, my dad was an agent, and I didn't tell my mom to go and process, I just told them to go and study, was going with my friends, so she let me go. And so I went that way and just, we started protesting and, you know, yelling, and the police came and they started kind of trying to separate us and use clubs or whatever to kind of like hit us and push us away, and it didn't really work. And at the end of the night, I was in the street for a couple of hours, and then it started getting a lot bigger, and I just, my mom was at home, I was with my sister, I just said I'd go home for them. And I went home, and she told me, where were you? I'm like, I'm just, you know, studying. She goes, did you have a life? What? I have no idea what's happening. And I was like, no, I support the war. I don't know what you're talking about. These people are criminals. So she wouldn't think anything of me at all. And I did that the next day. Did the same thing. And people stayed in the streets of Egypt for 4 days in a row. First, this story, you know, just hitting people, pushing away, using the gas, the bomb, the gas fuel, whatever thing, you're trying to push people away. But because basically the majority of people in the streets were young people, they went online and they found out that if you use the gas here, if you use onion or soda on your face, it wouldn't affect you at all. And so they were shooting up with the gas thing, but it wouldn't affect, it didn't affect us at all. And we were in the streets for 4 days in a row, since, from the 25th to the 28th. And on the 28th at 6 p.m., the police forces were in the streets for 4 days in a row. They didn't leave at all, and they just put a hold in front of millions. And according to CNN and Fox News, there was at least 10 million people on the streets. And so the police forces just couldn't hold all of these people. And at 6 p.m., the 28th, they completely disappeared. Just gone. But before they disappeared, they opened all the jails and prisons. Started meditation. And Mubarak had a speech that night. He's like, well, that's what happened when you go against me. Criminals are going in the streets now. You have to go back home because that's what's going to happen here if you didn't go back. And just stuff like that. And young people in Egypt like, really? We're not going to go home again. You are police. And on the 4th day, the 28th, when the police disappeared, the military said that because you can't just leave the country without security. The military said that. And Mubarak told the military to start, you know, trying to keep the people away from the streets, but the military generals told him, we are in the streets because we're protecting the people, we're not protecting you. We be in the streets to protect the streets. And that was the main difference between having Egypt and Syria and Libya. Because in Syria and Libya, the military was defending the president against the people. But in Egypt, the military was saying, we're the people against whoever in power. And so the military told Mubarak, we're sorry, but you just can't really say anyway, you just can't do that. And we were in the streets for 18 days. And every time we did, Mubarak said, excuse me, I'm going to change, I'm going to do this again, I promise. But you were like, it's just too late. No, you can't stay anymore. And after 18 days left. And we were in the streets, the East were still having it, he's gone now. But so what? We don't even know what to do now. We never got to this point before. We were always in the streets protesting anything, but we never got to the point where you're gone, and we didn't just know what to do. And we didn't have a plan to do. We just didn't really know what to do. And when you change, and when you change a regime, and you don't have a plan to do, that's when radicals kick in, because we have a plan. They know what to do if we didn't know what to do. And not only harder organization was in the streets, but there wasn't better. They were better organizers, better educated, and they know what to do. And they went down the streets and like, well, we're gone, how about we get tried now? And Egyptians didn't really know anything about the Muslim Brotherhood. And they're like, is there anybody running against them? And I mean, we didn't know anything. The Muslim Brotherhood came in so hard and they tried to approach everybody to win. And they won a presidential election. And before Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood president, got in power, he said, I'm going to be a president for anybody in Egypt. That's my plan for the first 100 days, 6 months, and a year. And that you guys, if I did anything wrong, you can go down the street. And we're going to do all of this for you, all of this, which is with all the candidates today, right? And then after he got in power, literally the first 100 days, he changes, first 100 days, he changed the constitution to fit him and his organization. For 6 months, he made a new law that any decision people make cannot be broken. Like anything you say, it has to go regardless if it's contributing to another law or not. And young people in Egypt were just like, I was in Egypt at that time. We're like, we think Mubarak, who's way stronger than you, why you can't do this anymore? But again, the Muslim Brotherhood organization that was completely supporting him met him up. And so young people in Egypt said, well, we should take him out of the house. And we tried, because he came here with a fair election, I was going to say he was taking the office with a fair election. And so people in Egypt were like, we should take him out of the house. He came in fair election, so we should do something legal as well. And so they decided to bring down rebellious figures. Just for you, you write your name, your social security number, and you're against it. And they decided to get more papers than the human blueprint and take to the Supreme Court and tell them we don't want him anymore. Since they changed the Constitution, you can't kick him out any other way. And so the day that we come out, people collect 25 million papers that would be able to find against him. And so the day that people were supposed to take the papers to the Supreme Court, Hashim Muslim Brotherhood first went down to run the Supreme Court, they said nobody's going to get it. Literally, that's what he did. And people were like, well, alright, you're going to go down the street again. And people went down the street, and after a couple of days, the military stepped in again, and we forced him out. And after we forced him out, before we forced him out, he was like, I can't deal with a legit election, a fair election, I'm not meeting. And people were telling him, you're going to get civil war today, and then like Syria or Libya, you got to do something. How about an early presidential election? If you want, you can just keep it. Like, I can't hear the termination. I don't care what happens. I'm staying here. And that's when people decided to just go down and kiss again and until he leaves. And after that, there was no any terrorist attack at all during his regime. Never. There's nobody died at all during Morsi's regime. Right after we kicked Morsi out, almost every single one, a suicide bomber go and kill some soldiers. And suicide bombers, and they do that in the name of the Muslim Brotherhood, and their Muslims, and they do that because their president is gone. And all that terrorist action that's going in Egypt is going in one little town that's on the border between Egypt, Gaza, and outlying Israel. It's one little town, and when Morsi got in power, he basically forgave all the terrorists that was in jail and released them from the jail, and all of them went to stay in this one little town between the Egypt-Israeli Gaza borders. And they built tunnels, underground tunnels between Egypt and between this town and Gaza, and they would just do everything they want. And then after we get him out, every couple months, suicide bombers in Northern Sinai, a bunch of soldiers were dying. If Egypt did anything against them, all the media would say, well, what happened to the human rights? And, well, what happened to the human rights when you kill soldiers every couple of months? And I've seen so many Muslim brothers going on TVs and claiming that they should have stayed in power, they didn't do anything illegal, and they're not terrorists. However, the Muslim Brotherhood is known as a terrorist organization in almost all over the world, except three countries, such as the U.S. I don't know why that, but it's not known as a terrorist organization in the U.S. And when you read the history of all the terrorist organizations throughout the history, ISIS and Al-Qaeda, all of them, came out from the Muslim Brotherhood. They started in the Muslim Brotherhood, and then they branched out to be more extreme. So that's basically what happened in the last 4 years in the Middle East. Just people take their prison out, they have a plan B, radicals kick in, and they end up where they are now. So that's basically what happened in the last 4 years in Asia. And I just really have to talk about it because it's really close to my heart, and I was doing everything it started, and we had a really good intention. It didn't end up as we thought it would, but we had good intentions, and that's what we tried to do. So that's basically what happened. If you guys have any questions about Friday's work in the morning, for tonight, or the long or Christianity, that I would be glad to answer you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. What is the government system now?
In Egypt?
Yes.
Okay.
Is it Muslim Brotherhood?
And so, June 30th, 2013, we kicked out mostly the most liberal guy. And for a year, we got the Supreme Court judge to the president just until we made a new election. And so for this year, we had the Supreme Court judge to be the president until we made a presidential election after that. And we had the president for a year now, we named Al-Sisi. Economically, he has been doing a phenomenal job. You guys, I don't know if you know that, but Egypt had its way set out. That was two ways. We were coming from Mediterranean to Turkey, we would go to the Suez Canal, and 1 year, Al-Sisi built another Suez Canal. So each one of them would be only one way. Which, the first Suez Canal took us 10 years to build. We built a new line just 1 year. And even had a logistic zone around it, and economically, it has been doing really well. People like him, people supporting him, and I'm usually not really happy or optimistic about a politician, but he has been doing good so far. So I'm really optimistic about the future. What happened is done. And it's happening everywhere. I mean, we saw what happened in France. It's just happening everywhere. You can't really lose any terrorism, so you can fight it. But I think economically and politically, everything is really going well in Egypt so far. Yeah, after I converted to Christianity, I had to break up with her because I was just too afraid to talk to her about Christianity and try to convert her. And at the same time, I was a Christian and I was going to hear her and I just couldn't stay with her anymore. And so I broke up with her, was really hard, and after I broke up with her, dad actually just told me, what, we need to talk, and I talked to him, like, what happened? And I told him, well, I'm just, you know, going to hear and I'm not sure how it's going to go, and I'm just not sure if I can do it anymore or not. And he was really sweet to me, he was just like, alright, you know what, I'm here for you, and he just talked to you, all was going to be here for you, and they were really nice to me after what I did, which I was really neat for my feet, which was very nice to me. And broke up, I think, last year she got married, so she's married now, and I'm happy for her.
What about your mother? Do you think she's a your mother, is it you and a sister? You say you have a mother and a sister?
Yes.
And
Well, my dad, but my dad was outside of Canada all the time. My dad has been working out all his life, but he's always going to Egypt. You know, that's his base and he's good work. But my mom never wanted to leave Egypt. And so I'm going to think that whatever wanted to come and stay in the U.S. And as a matter of fact, he's actually still going to know that I'm a Christian. He thinks I'm here for school and I'm going to go to college to get my education, but he doesn't know that I'm a Christian yet. And I'm not sure how I will tell them, because feeling Egypt is a little bit different than feeling the U.S. And I have a really strong relationship with my sister. She's 15, she's 9 years younger than me, she's like my little baby, and I have my mother and my dad, I love them so much, and I just don't want to lose my relationship with them. And I haven't told them yet. And a lot of people have criticized me for that, but it's just really hard and really complicated still now. I'm not sure how I'm going to do this. But honestly, my plan is, I don't know when, but when I'm able to, when I'm ready for it, I'm just going to tell them, you know, I can work with non-Christianity, and here's the reasons why I did it, and here's the reason why I think you should do it too. And then I'm going to like calm down a little bit and kind of wait to hear from them, see how they react. So that's my plan. I'm not sure when I'm going to do it, but hopefully soon.
It's like putting your life on the line, isn't it?
Well, you know, the way I always look at it is Jesus came to earth. All his mission was to die for everybody. I mean, for anybody, for the people who killed him, he was praying for them. And if somebody died for you, you get to do something back for him, you know? And that's what I've been trying to do. And after my friend died in front of me when I was 17, I got to the point of realization where it doesn't matter how old you're going to live, you're going to die one day. And you always have to be ready for this day. And so, that's what I've been trying to do.
Are you afraid at all, any part of that there will be retaliation against your family once somebody finds out or your family talks that you became a Christian? Are you afraid of retaliation against family rather than yourself?
Yeah, because, well, people in Egypt, whether they're Muslims or Christians or all the Jews in Egypt, They're very religious. I mean, they're just really religious. And religion in Egypt is not just a religion, it's a lifestyle, and it's a study thing. It's like, it's who you are, you know? And so if people knew that I left Islam, I'm a Christian now, the evil of my family is going to be pretty much isolated from everybody. Everybody's going to, like, take it away all of it, you know? And as much as that's hard for me, that's going to be very hard for my family as well. I don't think my family will ever hurt me or do anything to me. You know what, I always try to ignore this part and not to think about it, because it's really hard and it drains me down when I think about it. Because I don't really know what is going to stay against you, I'm just doing. And so for the most part, I'm just trying to ignore it and just not think about it for now.
Pray about it.
What?
Everybody pray about it.
Thank you very much.
When your friend died, what was lacking in your Muslim belief that led you to turn to Christianity?
All right.
To seek God through a Christian standpoint?
All right, that's a great question. When my friend died, I started reading all different kinds of books, all different kinds of religions. And I remember a background from my favorite religions was, it was a religion in India. They have the prettiest temple, the prettiest building I've ever seen in my life. I mean, very big and gold ceilings. It was so pretty. But it was full of rats, and they would go there to worship rats. And I was just like, I don't like it, but it's just going to have this one again. I keep reading. And so when you read different books, when I read the Bible, I read that Jesus was on the cross, and they were killing him, and he was praying for them. That's what I read. Okay, that's what the Bible says about Jesus, right? Go to Islam. Islam said that Jesus was not a son of God. He was just a prophet, and he came from an Israelite, and he did not die on the cross. It was not him. Okay? Islam said it. It's a little bit complicated, so I'm trying to be very simplified very much. So Islam said that Jesus did not die on the cross. It was a Jewish guy who told the Roman soldiers to kill Jesus. God made this Jewish guy look like Jesus, and he killed him on the cross. He didn't kill Jesus. Okay? And so, it was a Jewish guy who wanted to kill Jesus, right? On the cross. How come the Jewish guy was praying for the people who were killing him? It just didn't make sense to me, right? I'm like, okay, because I think it was near the cross and they were killing me, I didn't think I would be praying back for them. I'm just being honest here. And so, if it was a Jewish guy who wanted to kill Jesus, he wouldn't be praying back for it. He would be saying, you know, it's not me, don't kill me. But he didn't say that, and he was praying for that. And that's really where it gets me thinking. I'm like, so which story is right now? Because they got two different stories now. And it's just, and if it was in Jesus, how would somebody be praying back for that? And that was really where it started believing more in the Bible, because I get to the point where whoever was on the cross was praying for those who were killing him. So of course it wasn't Jesus that I wanted to kill Jesus, it was somebody else. And it made more sense to me that it was Jesus, it was Son of God, because I don't think any human being would be praying for those who were killing him. I mean, we should, but it's just really hard, right? And this point was really where I got thinking and leaning more towards the Bible than I did. And then I started reading it, and I get to the first verse, love your enemy. And it's just like, I've never read anything like this in my life before. I mean, when you read different religions, Islam. In Islam, God has 99 names. He's merciful, he's gracious, he's powerful, he's everything. Beautiful 99 names. But it's not love is not one of them. So the whole idea of God is love, and love your enemy, all of this was just, those are different relationships with God then that I had in Islam. And so that was the point for really seeing reading more about the Bible. So, does that answer your
question? Yes. All right. So, Ty, since you've been here in the United States and in Florida, have you had a chance to interact with other Muslims? And has the conversation come up about you becoming a Christian? And at the same time, have you been able to talk to others who are Muslim about being a Christian?
Okay, so when I applied to Florida College the first time, they rejected me. And they told me there's a mosque 2 miles away from the school. And they're not sure what kind of people go to this mosque. And if I think you're a college, you knew about me, they weren't really sure what they're going to do to fix it. And they, you know, they care about me, I'm not sure if they care about all the student body for the college. And they wouldn't harm anybody. And I had to call the person, I called Buddy Payne himself. And I told him, you know, that's my story, and I really want to come to Florida College. And he told me, we can't get to you as long as you can't keep yourself low profile and don't spread yourself everywhere. So it's like, you can talk to Christians, but don't try to tell your story to anybody who's not Christian. And I'm like, all right, so that's a little bit nerdy from some other people. But I actually hit interviewing one of the Fox channels on TV. And they had interviewed me, it was called for the wrong Christianity, and the in my face, they kept reading my voice a little bit, and they had an email there for anybody who had a question about the wrong Christianity with emails. And a lot of people have emailed me about, you know, the day coming as a model, or they have a model friend or a model neighbor, and they didn't know how to do with them. And people would email me, and I would correspond with them and help them to do that. So most of the time I've been doing it over emails, or Facebook, but I couldn't tell you in person yet. I've been trying to do my best so far.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Piano. What is the appeal of Islam in the letter of Jesus Christ? There's life, and only Jesus Christ is there salvation. What is the appeal that so many are deceived as wrong delusion?
All right, so when you argue with any Muslim, he would tell you, Muhammad did not know how to read or write at all. How come he came up with a book like this? Happened before God, right? I mean, he didn't know how to read or write. And let's be honest, there's 1.4 billion believers in this book, so it has had some good stuff in it, right? And so he would tell you how come he didn't know how to read or write at all, and he came up with such a book. And most people don't really know how to say this. I mean, unless you have an answer, you're more likely going to believe in this book because it came out from somebody who didn't know how to read or write. But the answer to this is, he didn't know how to read or write, but it's still true. And he came up with a book that has a lot of good stuff, a lot of good bad stuff, but it has a lot of good stuff, let's be honest here. But what happened is, before Muhammad was born, his dad died. When he was a year old, his mother died. And he lived with his uncle all his life. His uncle was a merchant. He would go to Syria every twice a year. The winter and the summer trip to go to Syria, buy some stuff and go back to Mecca. Right? So Mecca is here and Syria is here. What's in between them? You know the map? Alright, here's Mecca, which is in Saudi Arabia, and Syria is still Syria. In between there is Jerusalem. And Jerusalem is basically the center for all the religious people. They would stay there. And all the trips from Mecca to Syria, they would stay a couple nights in Jerusalem. And he did this for 40 years, since he was a year old until he was 40. And when you read the Quran, it's basically identical to the story in the Bible. The exact same story as everything is the exact same story. And up to Abraham. Grant Abraham was going to sacrifice his son Ishmael, not Isaac, and it's Muhammad came from Ishmael. So it has to be the right one, so that's Muhammad came from Ishmael, not Isaac. But that was the only difference at all. But when you read the Quran and the Bible, exact same story is still whatsoever. So if he was talking to people going back and forth from Saudi Arabia to Syria, and talk to religious people, and he told them the stories of the Bible, you can write a book about it. Right? And that's what the models claim they were like. He was the author of the right, they gave him such a great book. And if you don't have an answer for that, you most likely don't fall for it. That was the answer for it. That was that answer to your question?
Yes. Believing we're baptized for sin, is there a plan of salvation?
No, just believing God and praying on the day and all of that. But the problem is, you're not guaranteed to be good in and out. You can do everything you can do, but if you're not feeling sure, and then where are you going to go? And honestly, the word Islam means submission. And if you're a Muslim, you're submissive and literally to God, do everything you want. And Islam is the most growing religion all over the world, especially in the, you know, Western Europe and U.S. And I don't understand it. Basically, growing so fast among teenagers. And I don't understand how teenagers like the idea of submission and being submissive. Because, you know, it's freedom for all of us. You can do whatever you want to do. And I still don't understand how a lot of teenagers, Western Europe and U.S., convert to Islam. But the Islam is submissive, just completely submit to God, do anything you can, and you might go to heaven to sin.
So, you know, our news media reports that basically Muslims are not fighting people, or they're not extreme, they just have extreme elements. However, the Quran teaches, I mean, it's very full of kill your enemies, you know. I mean, you go after them and it's eye for eye, tooth for tooth, but more so, you know, if they don't listen to you, kill them.
Okay, so we need to do this. There's a verse in the Quran that says, if you saw a non-believer, kick him to the son of the Lord, right? And Quran, I think it's probably the only religion that doesn't have rules. Here's the book, and you can make your own version of the book. So the verse, for example, says, kick a non-believer to the son of the Lord. Some people will take it to the extreme, they will believe that kicking to the son of the Lord means kill them. And you get people, I guess, that extremists who do that. You get people who are more religious, they say, well, kick into the son of the Lord. Actually, you learn that you can kick into the son of the Lord. So if you found a believer, kick into the son of the Lord. And you get people more modern, less extremist, and they would say, well, kick into the son of the Lord, just don't start talking to him. So it's the same verse, just different understanding from it. So you'll see a good Muslim, and you'll see, you know, an extreme Muslim. That's just human beings, that's just who you are. So Islam is not about, and the book has a lot of bad stuff in it, like kill, eye for eye, or something like that. But also people would make their own understanding, and people would just be extremist from reading the same verse and have different understanding. Alright, so thank you guys for having me today. I really enjoyed it. Get to really sort of my friend before college. I had a friend before college. She was really religious and she was very good, and she actually tried to help me so much to read the Bible and to be a better person. But then after she left before college, she left church and she started going to different congregations and different denominations. And I asked her, why did you do that? She didn't really understand it. And she told me just it's more fun. You know, we had more fun at the other church, but still worship God. And she told me, well, you like some of us on stage. You can see it. I was like, yeah, I can, why not? And it was a Saturday, actually. We had a worship Saturday. So I was like, right. I went with her. And it was basically a nightclub by the morning. People were dancing and had like dance floor, and the preacher was in a jeans and a shirt, and he had a mic and he jumped around, and she told me, well, I'm still working on that, it's more funny. And I'm just like, if you're looking for funny, you really get the right one. But they worshiping God, they were all having fun. And we can't enable both of them only to do the best for God, but God only exists for one of them and not the other. However, both of them had the intentions and desires to get closer to God. And I told her the parable of the timber, Matthew 25. And it's one of my favorite parables. Basically, I'm not sure what it tells you is, there was a timber, and the 10 of them had the desire, the intention to meet God, to meet their head, right? The only 5 of them were wide enough and ready enough and brought oil with them to use the lamp so they can be ready. And the other 5, the foolish one, they had the desire and patience to meet God, and they actually asked the light that you can use your own voice, right? But they were not pretty. They had the patience, they wanted to see the speech, they didn't really care to bring oil or to be ready to use God. And what happened then was only the 5 ready people who were ready all the time got to hear him, and the other foolish versions, the other 5 foolish versions didn't get to meet God. And that's why I told her, I'm like, it's not clear about intentions or desires or if you really want to do this, or he has to do with just holding you to do. It's not about having fun, it's about following what God told you to do. And so my friend got in our 70 and he called, I'm not sure, he's probably never going to get ahead. And it's just so hard when I think about it. But as the title of Tim Berners told you, you have to be ready all the time because you don't know where you're going to go and you don't know when Jesus is going to come back. And so you have to always be ready for that day because you just don't know when that's going to happen. And so for those of you who are here today, but not a Christian, but trying to find the truth, and as I said today in the morning, Matthew 10 and 10 with me, just seek and you will find. Just try to get closer to God and He will get closer to you. So if you're here today and want to know more about the Bible and the study, please come forward.